Blog Talk Radio.
In the desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. So glad that you took out some of your time on your busy schedule to join me for the Monday morning edition of my radio broadcast. Well, today is the very last day I will be using my Windows Home Vista. And just actually about 45 minutes after the program is over today, I will head to Best Buy and pick up my brand new Asus laptop computer, and I'm very, very excited because, of course, that has Windows 10. It's the latest in technology, and everything is right up to par and up to the right level. It's been a good journey with the Home Vista for the last 8.5 years, but, of course, it is time to upgrade, and I'm looking forward to just kind of feeling out the new computer, getting used to its functions, navigating Windows 10. I heard it's a lot easier than Windows 8 when it was launched a couple of years ago. So it's going to be a good day. It's the first day of vacation, and I am so excited about being here with you. But I have a very, very sober, very, very intense topic today to talk with you about. I don't know how familiar you are with this topic, but after today, you will be quite educated. It is the horrifying practice of child brides, of young 9-year-old children, sometimes 9, 11, at the very oldest 13, that are married to men twice their age. And of course, this is legal in places like Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, countries like that. These young, innocent girls are certainly not mature enough physically or spiritually for marriage. But because it's the culture and it's the practice, this goes on with millions of girls all over the world. So today, I want to talk to you about this subject. I want to inform you and educate you so that you can join me in speaking out and praying about this horrific practice. But let's start out by being educated. Let's find out the statistics, the facts, the practice of Child. Let's listen to this short tutorial right now on the cross in the desert.
Did you know that 39,000 girls become child brides every single day? Worse, these girls are often married to much older men. The practice of child marriage is a despicable violation of human rights. While it may seem like a foreign practice to some, it's still very much prevalent throughout certain parts of the world. According to a March 2013 World Vision report, every year 13.5 million girls marry before their 18th birthday. This trend is especially rampant in South Asia, where this happens to 46% of women, and in West and Central Africa, where the percentage is as high as 41%. Not only does underage marriage suppress the livelihood of the victims, but it also perpetuates poverty, violence, and instability in developing countries where child marriage is prevalent. Early marriage is a major health risk for young brides. Girls frequently experience severe reproductive health complications, premature pregnancy, high child mortality rates, and are often subject to domestic violence. According to BBC UK, pregnancy-related deaths are the leading cause of death worldwide for girls aged 15 to 19. In Nigeria, 39% of women are married before the age of 18, and 17% before the age of 15. In Afghanistan, 39% of women are married before 18 due to extreme poverty and hunger. Desperate parents marry their daughters off increasingly early in hopes of giving them a better life. Over half of Nepalese girls are married before 18, making Nepal one of the highest-ranking countries for underage brides. So what can we do to help prevent child marriage? Education. Child marriage is especially predominant among uneducated women. According to a PBS report, girls with a secondary education are up to 6 times less likely to marry young when compared to girls with little or no education. An education can also provide an alternative opportunity for girls other than marriage and increase their socioeconomic status. Second important factor, poverty reduction. The world's poorest countries have the highest rates of child marriage. Families often marry girls off to lessen their economic burden and provide a future for their daughters. Girls from poor families are about twice as likely to marry young than girls from more financially stable households. While we can't change the world overnight, the more we talk about these prevalent issues and get them out in the open, the more we can hope to ignite a change. As millennials, it's our job to help make the world a better place. Share this video and join the fight to stop child marriage.
Well, there you go. It's a very, very short educational, I guess, tutorial to just educate you on the facts and what we can do about improving the social and economic conditions in countries that are poor, where this is a rampant practice, and also those countries that participate. Basically, they think they're giving their children a better life, and they're doing it in some cases for economic gain, but it's horrific. A child that age is not ready for marriage, like I mentioned, physically, spiritually. It can cause so many reproductive problems later in life. It can cause death. It's just something that is not right. It's a horrific human rights violation. And what I want to do right now, I want to spend some time, I want to tell you a story. And this is from the Daily Mail. It's by a writer named Ruth Stiles. It's from about 2 years ago. But I came across this story that I think best describes this horrific child bride practice. And it actually takes place in Iran, where this young girl was just 11 years old. And in order to escape marrying an older man, she set herself on fire. And I want to tell you Mashid's story. Her name is Mashid Rezai. Today, she is 36 years old, and she lives in the UK. And what she did is she set herself ablaze to avoid this arranged marriage to a much older man. But it didn't stop there. The horrible human rights atrocities against her didn't stop there. But let's go into this story. I'm going to read this to you from the Daily Mail, from Ruth Style. This is her story, reporting on Mashid's life. And I'm going to read this word for word because I think you'll really be able to see in your mind's eye this young girl and her story. It needs to be told. This is a perfect example of the horrific practice of child brides. Let's listen. Twisting her skirt nervously in her hands, it is clear that life for Mashid Rezai from northern Iran hasn't been easy, and that talking about it is harder still. Aged 11, she doused herself in petrol and set herself ablaze in a bid to avoid an arranged marriage to a man that was more than 20 years her senior. Now 36, she remains terribly scarred and was forced to flee to London to escape her father, a man so violent that he beat his daughter in the hospital as she recovered from her burns. Yes, I resent the people who didn't help me, admits Mashid, who was too ashamed of her scars to be photographed. The people who should have loved me did not protect me. They hurt me for life. Growing up in a remote village, Mashid says her childhood was a relatively happy one, although she, her mother, and her three brothers were all terrified of the family patriarch. My mother was my father's fourth wife, she explains. He didn't have children with his other wives. My mother told me that all three of his previous wives ran away because he beat them. And his all-too-busy fists weren't just directed at his wife. I remember once he tied my hands and feet with a rope to a piece of wood, and he and my mother beat me with another piece of wood, Mashid remembers. They were angry with me because I had gone to the gate at the front of our house to watch a wedding procession, and they did not like the families holding the wedding. Despite the violence, Mashid says she was a happy child who enjoyed her studies at the village school and loved playing with her brothers. A happy child? The area she grew up in, close to the city of Iraq, was, she says, beautiful, and she had plenty of friends with whom to enjoy it, among them a girl named Zainab. With both of her parents working in the fields, Mashid was expected to take on the bulk of the household chores and shared cooking duties with her mother. But the peace of her childhood was about to come to an end when Zainab, her friend, then just 9 years old, was asked for by a much older man. She was very beautiful and tall, remembers Mashid, her voice cracking slightly and tears welling up in her eyes. People noticed her. Desperate to escape the marriage being forced upon her, Zainab resorted to extreme measures. She burnt herself, whispers Mashid, and she died. Zainab's death would prove to have chilling consequences for her friend. Less than a year after her friend's suicide, Mashid's father announced that she, too, had been found a husband, despite the fact his daughter was just 11 years old. My mother came to me at home and told me that the next afternoon, a man would come and ask me for my hand in marriage, she explains. I asked her who it was, and she told me the name of the man who lived in our village, who was married and had two children. I was only 11 years old, and he was 35. Mashid was distraught. I was crying, she says, as tears well up in her eyes once more. I told my mother that he already had a wife and children. I said I was only 11 years old. I told her I wanted to be a teacher because I loved my teacher, but she insisted that I would get married to this man. The girl ran to her teacher, hoping for help, but was told nothing could be done. Mashid then ran to hide in the mountains, but fearful of being eaten by a wolf, returned home and hid in an outbuilding. My parents found me and assumed that because I had returned home, I was agreeing to the wedding, she says. Wow. I still couldn't believe that it was actually true, that it was going to happen. But when I saw my family preparing food and setting out tables, I really knew that it was going to happen. Desperate to avoid marriage and her friend Zainab's example in mind, Mashid ran into the kitchen, took out a bottle of paraffin, doused herself in the contents, and set herself ablaze. I was panicking, she explained. I just wanted to escape, so I tried to kill myself. My father had lots of weapons, and I considered using them, but I chose the fire because I was following what my friend Zainab had done. I poured some paraffin on my skin, and I lit a match. My skin caught fire. When I saw the fire, it was intense and very real. I regretted it. I tried to put the fire out with my hands. I tried to get out, but I had shut the door, and it was difficult. I was panicking. The flame was raging. It was burning my face. I could see flames in my hair. I managed to get out into the courtyard. A neighbor was on the flat roof next door. He saw me and jumped down. I don't know what happened after that. Masjid spent the next 3 months unconscious in hospital in Iraq. Although even that wasn't enough to spare her from the wrath of her father, who was furious that his plans had been foiled and fearful for the family honor. I was screaming constantly every day, she remembers, of the months that followed. I had open skin when they changed the bandages. On top of that, my father beat me for what I had done while I was in the hospital. Also, once I wet myself and my mother punched me in the face. They were so angry with me. When Masjid left hospital, it was to return to her parents' house after her former fiancé rejected her because, as she reveals, he saw now her as dirty and ugly. As burnt, scarred woman, I was vilified. People attacked me. They insulted me, pulled at my clothing, and children threw stones at me. I was always scared. I had to run away. And, of course, she ran away to London, and she found some acceptance there. I was so surprised when I first arrived, Masjid says, because people did not point at me or throw stones at me. It was such a relief. Since being here, I have been trying to come to terms with what happened to me. I went to study, which I didn't have the chance to do before. Girls and women at risk of early and forced marriages, so they don't end up like me. As for her family, Masjid says, she will never contact them and never wants to see Iran again. I can never return. Excuse me, I can't bear to. Everything bad that has happened to me happened there. I could not have a moment of peace there. Even thinking of Iran means I cannot even have peace. Now, her story, I wish I knew what is happening now currently. But the Iranian and Kurdish Women's Rights Organization has really reached out to her. They help women through, that have suffered honor violence, and they campaign against female genital mutilation. So this is the incredibly painful story of Masjid and what she's had to suffer through because of the practice of child brides. Or child marriage that goes on in countries like Iran. But there are other countries that this horrifying story takes place in. And we're going to hear the story now of an Afghan child bride right now on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
Saida, married at 9 to a 60-year-old man. 8 years on, she's on the run from him.
He doesn't care if I'm dead or alive.
Saida is just one girl in the most shocking set of statistics in Afghanistan. 60% of women are still married as children, often at 9 or 10. Under Afghan law, girls can't marry under 16, but the law's ignored by families and the government.
There was an old man in the village who had already killed 2 wives and had a very bad reputation. No one would even let him take a dog for a walk.
Saida's father died when she was little, and her brothers claimed her as their property. They sold her to the old man as his wife.
If he saw a shoe or a stick, anything, he would beat me with it. I spent 7 years with him, as if I was sitting on a hot stove all the time. I had 4 miscarriages because of the beating and the stress.
Then her husband took Saida on the road, all over Afghanistan, to places where they weren't known, to make money from her. He sold her, forced her into having sex with other men.
He would say I was his daughter. He actually sold me to 3 or 4 people. You understand what I mean? He took money from these people. I would cry and say, for God's sake, what's happening to me?
It was in Mazar-e-Sharif, a government-controlled city, that I found Saida. She'd confided in a woman at a shrine. The police were alerted and Saida was taken to a woman's shelter. Now her stepfather and staff at the shelter are helping her to get a divorce. But Saida's husband won't agree to let her go. He's unlikely to ever be prosecuted for what he did to a child.
I am very scared. He is in touch with my stepdad through the phone. When I talk to him, he says he is praying to God for an opportunity to drink my blood. He says he wouldn't even care if he dies after that.
Saida's childhood has been destroyed. She's 17 and can't read or write. But she knows that only by educating girls and boys will Afghanistan's women be brought out of the dark ages.
All the problems we face are to do with a lack of schooling. People who are educated will not make their daughters and sisters suffer.
The very, very painful story in Afghanistan of just one girl among thousands, Saida. And it's horrific when you listen to something like this, how abusive these men are to these child brides. And this is the practice of pedophilia. Underage children are being violated, are being raped, are being abused by these older, disgusting men. And this practice must somehow be changed, must somehow be repealed. The laws must be changed. The poverty in these countries must be improved to stop this curse from continuing. I want to take us back to Iran and tell you a very, very sad story. Another example of child brides. And this is the story of Razia Ebrahami. She was forced to marry at the age of 14, and she became a mother at 15. At 17 years old, she killed her husband. And then she turned 21, and she's on Iran's death row. Now, the last I heard, she was still on death row. There has been no more stories about this young girl. And since her execution was set to take place, there's nothing I can find to substantiate what's happened to her. I'm assuming she is still somehow in prison, still awaiting execution, and hopefully and prayerfully there will be a miracle and a breakthrough. But let me tell you her story. She says, I married our neighbor's son when I was only 14 because my dad insisted. My dad insisted I should marry him because he was educated and was working as a teacher. I was 15 when I gave birth to my child, and her child is probably 6 or 8 years old by now. I don't know who I am or what is life all about. My husband mistreated me. He used an excuse to insult me, even attacking me physically. Now, Ebrahami is said to have admitted to killing her husband with his own gun before burying him in the garden. Ebrahami initially told the police her husband was missing, but her own father found the dead body and gave her to the police. Now, Iran is signatory to the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights, which prohibits death penalties for convicts if their act of crime is committed while they were under the age of 18. Now, this probably explains why there has been no execution. They will wait till a certain age on some of these convicts before they execute them. Every time an Iranian judge issues a death sentence for a child offender like Ebrahami, he should remember he is flagrantly violating his legal responsibilities to administer justice fair and equitably. Iran's judiciary should reverse its execution order of a battle child bride. Now, let's continue reading about her. Although a death penalty for Ebrahami was handed down by the judges, her victim's family have until the very last minute to pardon her, a decision they have so far refused. Under Iranian law, the victim's family have a final say over the death penalty. In April, an Iranian mother pardoned the man who had killed her son just moments before he was to be executed. Iran's judicial authorities have previously denied accusations of juvenile convictions, but according to the Human Rights Watch, the country has executed at least 10 juvenile offenders since 2009. In 2013, Iran and Iraq were responsible for more than two-thirds of the executions that happened worldwide, according to Amnesty. Iran says most of its executions are related to drug offenses. Now, Shadi Sadir, a London-based Iranian lawyer with the group's Right Justice for Iran, told The Guardian that the case against Razi Ebrahani, also known as Miriam, underlined a hidden social and legal issue in Iran. Forced girl marriage in Iran is a hidden social and legal issue. However, it should be noted that Miriam Ebrahani, which is her also her name, is not a unique case at all. This March, for instance, Farzana Muradi, 28, was executed for murdering her husband. She was forced to get married at 15, gave birth at 16, fell in love with another man at 19, and was accused of murdering her husband at the age of 20. Now, the lawyer for Miriam says, women such as Miriam or Farzani, who are forced to marry at childhood, are actually being raped constantly under the name of marriage. While they should go to school at that age, they are instead experiencing a life full of violence with no legal support. They eventually kill themselves or their husband to end the vicious cycle. Now, her lawyer said, Justice for Iran's research shows in 2012 alone, 1,537 girls under the age of 10 and 29,827 girls between the ages of 10 and 14 were registered for marriage in Iran. Now, this article I'm reading to you about Razi or Miriam was last reported on the 20th of June 2014, and there has been no information on her future, on what has happened, if the family has pardoned her. Usually if you hear something like that, that the family agrees to pardon her and there's blood money, or that the execution did or was carried out, there would have been a report. So I'm assuming that she is still in prison, of course, and still on death row. And I just pray that a miracle will happen in this young girl's life. She has had a horrific, painful life. And under the circumstances, she probably had to defend herself against her husband. This is much like the book I wrote not too long ago, The Case of Rahane Jabari. And it reminds me so much of her case. When I think of the pain that these young girls are experiencing, I think of what the scripture says. The Bible says the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. What I want to do now is play a song of hope in honor and tribute to these young girls who have suffered unbelievable pain in their life under the practice of child marriage. And I want to dedicate this song to Rizay this morning. I want to dedicate this song to Mashid and to all young girls who are suffering in this bondage of child marriage. This is a song by Planet Shakers. It's a song of hope called Healer. Let's listen.
You are all.
a beautiful song of hope by Planet Shakers called Healer. And when you think about the words to that song, He's more than enough for me. It is Jesus that brings compassion and mercy into our life. He is the one who heals the outward and the inward scars. It's by the power of His great love and His great grace. And Jesus is the only hope for these scarred women who are given up on life, who have felt that there is no hope, no reason to live. It is Jesus that gives us hope again. It is Jesus that gives us healing from those inward and outward scars. I want to transition right now to one of the hottest issues really all in the world today. And it's the subject of immigration. It's the hotbed issue for the election that's coming up between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And just last week at the Democratic National Convention, once again, and I hate to say this, it's exploitation on the part of liberals, but they had a Muslim couple give a speech about their son who was killed in 2004 serving his country, the United States, and they brought up the issue of immigration and pointed the finger at Donald Trump. This was one of the key highlight speeches of the convention. And what I want to do is play a segment of it and then come back and make some remarks. So let's listen to this very powerful and emotional speech.
Donald Trump consistently smears the character of Muslims. He disrespects other minorities, women, judges, even his own party leadership. He vows to build walls and ban us from this country. Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy. In this document, look for the words liberty and equal protection of law. Have you ever been to Arlington Cemetery? Go look at the graves of brave patriots who died defending United States of America. You will see all faiths, genders, and ethnicities. You have sacrificed nothing and no one. We cannot solve our problems by building walls.
Okay, I'm going to get into this speech and I'm going to respond to this because I think there are some important points that need to be made about Beach and the whole atmosphere of the immigration issue. But I thought a good response to what this man had said came from Mike Huckabee, who was running for president, and I thought he gave what I thought was a very well thought out and respectful response to this Muslim man. And of course, we honor this family. We honor the son that gave the ultimate sacrifice for freedom for his country and for the love of his country. We certainly salute him for his bravery and his sacrifice. But there are other issues going on in this speech that have to be addressed. And I'm going to let you hear Mike Huckabee on the Kelly Files show answering to this speech.
Developing tonight, one of the most talked about moments of last night's Democratic convention is the emotional address from the father of a fallen Muslim American soldier. Khizr Khan took to the stage to speak about his late son, Humayun. In 2004, the Army captain saved the lives of fellow soldiers by insisting they stand back while he checked out a suspicious-looking car that abruptly detonated with 200 pounds of explosives inside. Now the elder Khan argues that under a Donald Trump presidency, his son, a hero, would not have even been allowed in the country. Watch.
Like many immigrants, we came to this country empty-handed. We believed in American democracy, that with hard work and goodness of this country, we could share in and contribute to its blessings. Our son, Humayun, had dreams too of being a military lawyer, but he put those dreams aside the day he sacrificed his life to save the lives of his fellow soldiers. Hillary Clinton was right when she called my son the best of America. If it was up to Donald Trump, he never would have been in America. Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy. Have you ever been to Arlington Cemetery? Go look at the graves of brave patriots who died defending United States of America. You will see all faiths, genders, and ethnicities. You have sacrificed nothing and no one.
What a moment. Governor Mike Huckabee joins me now. He's a former presidential candidate and a Fox News contributor and former governor of Arkansas. Great to see you, Governor. So this was an electric moment at the convention last night. We were actually just going to break as he started and then in a pre-tape with the General Allen when he came back. But it was the talk of the convention. And he is in a great position to criticize Donald Trump. And it's led a lot of people today to say his was the single speech at the DNC about which the Republicans and Donald Trump should most worry. Your take on it?
Well, first of all, let's be very fair. That father gave probably what was undoubtedly the best speech of the entire convention. And it was powerful because it was personal. And he spoke of his personal sacrifice as a dad. Nobody can argue with that. Nobody can argue with the heroism of his son or the love of country that this father and his son have for America. That's just indisputable. So I want to be sure that everyone understands that I don't think a person looks at that speech as a partisan. But the one thing that always has to be put into perspective is that Donald Trump has not said that this young man would not have been allowed into the country, because this family came to America because they wanted to come and be Americans. And his son proved how much he wanted to be by the sacrifice that he made. But Donald Trump doesn't want to make sure that every Muslim never comes to America. But he does want to make sure that when people come, whoever they are, not just Muslims, but whoever they are, if they immigrate to this country, they immigrate because they want to assimilate and be Americans. This young man, this
that
young
is not
man's father
at all
and his
what
mother
he has
really
proposed.
Did that.
That's not what he's proposed, Governor. He proposed a Muslim ban, which only now has he changed, which he said he didn't walk it back. He says he's expanded his ban on Muslims to include Muslims from any territory that suffers terrorism. And the UAE, where this little boy at 2 years old came from, would be included. His parents are from Pakistan. That would be included. And so that's the dad's point, that his son, an American hero, would not have been here if Donald Trump had been president when they wanted to come.
Well, Donald Trump, though, has clarified, Megan, that his intent is to make sure that people are vetted. It's not just an outright or a permanent ban, and even said it would be a temporary suspension of immigration until we knew. Keep in mind that this was in the context of the president, President Obama, wanting to bring hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees to the country.
But that's a different issue. That's a different issue.
No, it's the same issue.
Syrian refugees is a different issue. That's not the same as Trump's Muslim ban. No, it isn't. It's not at all.
It was in the context.
Banning all Muslims, even temporarily, would have scooped up this family had they been looking to come to America under Donald Trump presidency. And we wouldn't have had Humayun Khan fighting for us and saving the lives of men on the battlefield in Iraq. That's his point.
I'm not taking anything away from this family, nothing from the father, nothing from the son. But I don't think it's accurate, nor is it fair, to say that Donald Trump would have stood in the way of a family getting to America who clearly wanted to come, who could be vetted, would be vetted, and found to be wanting to assimilate and become a part of America. And it's not just Muslims. Look, our immigration, an open border policy is disastrous for our country. It's disastrous for any country. Europe is beginning to find out how disastrous it is, and that's where Donald Trump is coming from. And again, I think we have to separate the powerful testimony of this father, the extraordinary example of his son, and also the responsibility of a United States president to keep this country safe and to make sure that the people who come here are not coming here with intentions, whether they're coming from some terrorist infiltrated country or whether they're coming from Europe.
That may be a good way of saying it, Governor, but that is not Donald Trump's stated policy. The way you said it there is far less controversial, at least to some, than the way that Donald Trump has said it. He said, I'm banning all Muslims temporarily, and then he said he was expanding it beyond Muslims to territories that suffer from terror until we can, quote, figure out what's going on. I got to leave it at that.
And that's the point, until we can figure what's going on.
All right, see you soon.
Well, the debate continues, but I have to agree with Governor Huckabee, or former Governor Huckabee, on his point-by-point response to this very emotional, very appropriate speech, and we all honor this young Muslim man's sacrifice to protect the soldiers under his command and protect our freedoms. None of us would ever say a derogatory word for that. He was a hero in what he did. But let me ask you a question. Have you thought about this as a question? Would this Muslim couple still have been invited to the convention if Donald Trump wasn't running for president? See, this to me, it reveals a bigger agenda. My question is, again, let me repeat it. Would this Muslim couple have been invited to the convention if Donald Trump was not running for president? So, again, this is exploitation. This is taking advantage, in my opinion, of a very, very serious death of a man. It's exploiting a tragedy for political gain, and it really is wrong. And I think that's the thing that angers me the most, is because how the DNC plays on our heartstrings and emotions through tragedy. They do this with the cop killings as well. They parade mothers up to the DNC to talk about their sons. In most cases, these sons were thugs. They had attacked police officers, and what are police officers supposed to do? They have to protect themselves, and in some cases, use deadly force. But again, they parade up these women, and then the Muslim couple, and it's exploitation of tragedy, and it is very, very sad to do something like this, and then they misrepresent the position of Donald Trump, as Huckabee so rightly pointed out. He is not calling for an overall temporary ban on those countries that are likely or are involved in very serious terrorism activities that we have to vet very carefully, everyone. And if we are questioning these Muslims that come from terrorist countries, then we have to stop, temporarily put a ban on until we can figure out how to proceed. What is wrong with that, whether it's Muslims or anyone else? Haven't we seen through the number of terrorist attacks all over the world and in our country that this is a very serious issue? Why is it at the DNC that this is not a serious issue to them? Why is it for the first two nights of their convention, they didn't even display the American flag? They had a Palestinian flag. Why is it at the convention, in the interfaith room, the only real religion represented was Islam? There are some things going on in the DNC that are absolutely wrong. And again, I go back to this speech. I applaud and honor this family's son's sacrifice. But again, it is exploitation for political purposes, and it's wrong. And again, their whole purpose was to attack Donald Trump. That's all their convention was about. They never gave a real explanation of what they're going to do to make our country better. They never hardly even talked about the issue of terrorism and ISIS. They spent their time attacking Donald Trump, and then they misrepresented Donald Trump. He would never be against someone coming here legally. But the Constitution does not provide safety for any illegal aliens that come here without first being brought here legally. And so there are so many issues that I wanted to bring out, plus what Mike Huckabee said, that I thought was a good, courteous, respectful answer to this issue of Muslim immigration. Okay. We're going to move on. Excuse me. I want to finish our program today on the theme of child brides and the theme of the horrific pain that these women endure. I want to go to my book that I recently wrote, In Defense of Rahane Jabari's Honor. The name of the book is Rahane, A Beautiful Sacrifice. I said sacrifice. Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, which is the meaning of her name. And we're talking about human rights for women and the protection for the honor of women instead of being exploited sexually by these older men in child arranged marriages. What I wanted to do in our closing minutes is I wanted to read to you a section from my book that best explains why I wrote this book for Rahane Jabari. And let me do that for you right now. It's called In Defense of Her Honor. In the Persian language, names have specific meanings that relate to life. The name Rahane means flower, fragrance. Ironically, my name in the English language, Randy, means defender. I don't believe that it's a coincidence that I am writing this book for Rahane. I am not merely writing out of sympathy. It is much bigger than that. I believe I have the God-ordained task to live up to the meaning of my name. I want to be a defender of Rahane's honor as a woman. Rahane was the helpless victim of a man's uncontrollable sexual advances, and she did what any honorable woman would do by defending herself. In Iran, the unfortunate reality is that women are the property of men. In a society that elevates the status of a man because of the Sharia law, according to the Quran, quote, men are superior to women, and the testimony of a woman is only worth half that of a man's. Surah chapter 2, verse 282. Surah chapter 4, verse 34. Rahane grew up in this kind of culture, and because she defended her honor against a former intelligence agent, her fate was sealed. The Iranian regime would do everything in its power to protect the reputation of a government man, which meant that Rahane had no hope of surviving, but instead would be sacrificed on the altar of convenience so that the Sarbandi name would not be tainted. Right before her execution, the regime brought in cameramen and reporters to pressure Rahane into changing her story. Quote, just say he did not try to rape me. In the midst of great pressure to preserve her life, Rahane refused to lie and compromise the truth, but instead she stood strong and tall as a majestic mountain and looked in the face of her accusers and responded, I will not lie. The reason I chose the name A Beautiful Fragrance as the subtitle of my book is because Rahane exemplified and lived up to the meaning behind her name. She was a beautiful fragrance of honor, kindness, mercy, and courage. She forgave her interrogators shortly before her execution and showed kindness and compassion to the many women political prisoners who came from destitute and filthy walks of life. This book is about a remarkable, extraordinary, and inspiring woman who suffered greatly at the hands of an evil dictatorship and illuminated a dirty prison with the beautiful fragrances of her wonderful character. It is my honor and pleasure to defend her honor and tell her incredible story to the whole world. After I wrote this, I realized that in just a couple of pages, I had told Rahane's story in many ways. In her prison letter number one, she said, "Perhaps someone in this world would hear my cries and feel my pain." And I certainly did. In every moment of writing this, I sensed just her being there. It was an amazing feeling. I can't explain it. And yet Rahane represents many thousands of other Iranian women who are suffering in prison, who have been violated or raped and are being put to death because of Sharia law, the shame and honor culture, or because to protect the reputation of the attacker. Women are shamed and made to feel dirty and humiliated, and they are the victims. They are the ones that have been assaulted. They are the victims of this crime. And yet they're put on display and made to feel dirty and ugly. Today on The Cross in the Desert, we've taken a look at the way women are treated in the Far East, the Middle East, in Europe, in Iran. And I do this program with the greatest of defense for the honor of these women. And I know deep down inside that the one person that can make a difference in all of these women's lives is Jesus. He has the power to heal the outward, the inward scars of all of our lives that have been broken. He is the Lord that is close to the brokenhearted, who comes and he heals those spirits of women that are crushed. And so I ask for you to think of these women today and to pray for their salvation, to pray for their healing, to pray that God would come into their life in a miraculous way and to change their heart and mind, to give them hope, to give them freedom, to give them healing again. And although maybe the outward scars will never even be healed by the best of surgeons, the divine God of the universe can do a healing in the heart that goes beyond anything we can imagine or ask. He is the healer. He is the one that gives hope to all women all over the world. And so today, please remember these women in all these countries. Please be diligent to pray and to speak out for them. I want to thank you so much for joining me today on The Cross in the Desert. I want to say God bless you, and I will see you again on Thursday with my brand new computer. God bless you. Have a great week.
Great of wrath, our soul.